Welcome to the Indie Marketers Podcast. Fuck yeah. It's been a while since I've said that. It's been a few weeks since we've had the last episode of the Indie Marketers Podcast. My name is Mike McFarlane. Welcome to episode 10. We are in double digits now. Double digits. That means we're above 10. We're equal to. There we go. That's my singing for today's episode. Today, we have revenue marketer extraordinaire, Shannon Fonts, joining us. Shannon and I just met each other over LinkedIn. She listened to the podcast. She reached out to me. We started conversing and thought it would be an awesome idea for her to come on. And we had an absolutely awesome conversation. We talked about everything from getting into marketing and revenue ops. We talked about buying software. We talked about working with people, working in an agency. We literally kind of talked about everything when it comes to someone being in tech these days. It was really cool. I'm going to stop rambling. We're going to jump in and we're going to enjoy this episode 10.
Tell me what I'm missing, UK girl.
Shannon Fonts, happy Friday.
We made it. Happy
we
Friday.
We made it. A couple of hours later than we had thought, but we're making it. It's all good.
Just make it work. We adapt.
We adapt. Yes. As marketers, that's what we are trained to do, is adapt. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. Thank you so much for wanting to come on the podcast. For context for the listener, there's more than one listener, but there's listeners that listen to this. Shannon and I started interacting on LinkedIn. She had mentioned that she had listened to the podcast. And one of the things that I try to bring with the podcast is hopefully a sense of authenticity and wanting to talk to other people who feel that same level of authenticity. And so Shannon and I had some back and forth. We have a lot of common connections, which I'm not surprised about. It's a pretty small world we work in, but really excited to have you on the podcast today and learn a little bit more about you, because if I'm being honest, outside of your LinkedIn profile, we've never chatted.
I know.
So let's introduce the world to Shannon. Shannon, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself here?
Yeah, this is my first podcast. It's not my first speaking engagement, but my first podcast. Thank you so much, Mike, for having me. And we have a lot of common connections. But again, yes, we've never met in real life.
No.
In real life, but maybe one day. I'm sure all of our friends are flying back or en route home from the conference.
Yes, will be.
But I just wanted an opportunity to not be a soundbite on LinkedIn and kind of start like interacting with this community. So that's why podcasts, right? And really date myself. You know, I think I've been part of this community before it even existed. Like,
I feel the same way.
List brokerage. Like, that was way, way back in the day when you were doing like actual mailings and you were, you know, measuring the ad space in a magazine and you're analyzing house files. Like, way before all these tools existed, it found me. And yeah, then I navigated somehow from New York to Montana, and it found me again through a printing company. You know this printing company as PFL.
Yep.
I know them as Printing for Less, and found them before they made their way into tactile marketing automation. And I was on the ground floor of that move from Printing for Less to PFL.
Wow.
And that's really where I was introduced to automation, marketing automation, but it was on the sales side, right? Like selling their TMA product and developing what that looks like, integrations into different platforms. Yep. So you can actually trigger that piece of gifting send or tactile piece from Marketo or Eloqua.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, oh, this is cool.
What year was that around? Because like I fancy myself an OG as well. I got into the space in 2006.
Oh, so you're before me. So Printing for Less didn't break out into TMA until probably, so I moved here 10 years ago. Ooh, so 2013, that is, I think.
No, that's 10 years. Think how much has changed in 10 years.
I know. And that's crazy. When Scott Brinker's like little infograph could actually fit on.
Yeah.
You could actually read it.
It's not just little pixels now.
Yeah. Just like a pixel. You can read the logo. You can actually tell the colors of the logo.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. That's a good measuring stick, actually, in terms of just how far technology has come, is that you can't even tell the logos and some of the categories I don't even know about. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy how much it's grown. And I can really appreciate you kind of coming in, especially with print. Like, print is still obviously very much a thing, but
yeah,
you're so much more on the digital side now. Someone said this to me, I think it was one of the ladies from Emmy, from Collective. You don't find marketing operations finds you. How did marketing ops find you?
Yeah. So now I'm in the sales world. We are, breaking ground with TMA, and we're using a homegrown CRM, that the founder had built for the company. And you start looking at all of these other tools that we're going to be triggering these printed products from, or these tactile pieces from. And you're like, wait a minute, there's a lot of potential here to help my sales team. There's a lot of potential here to help marketing. You know, how do I really dig my claws into it? And so that's when I say go over the hill, or I jumped over the hill. Yes. So Print for Less was in Livingston, Montana, and over the hill in Bozeman, Montana. So over the pass in Bozeman, Montana was a company called Elixir. So I went to Elixir to get my MBA or my graduate degree in operations. And I started there as a lifecycle specialist. So that was a Marketo Salesforce kind of shop. So that's, I kind of bleed a little bit of purple. That's where my subject matter expertise is. And it comes from Elixir. And goodness, the people that I met at Elixir, the bonds that I have there, such a great company. And it was bought out by Proficient. So okay. If you can imagine, there's a lot of tech in Montana.
I'm actually quite surprised, because that's not the, I've had a couple of guests on the podcast earlier who are from a town called Peterborough, which is just kind of 45 minutes away from me. And I would never have thought of it as being like a creative outlet type town. And it very much is. When you say Montana, I think about like dust balls flying across the road and like just farming and all of that. But there's a burgeoning tech scene there.
Absolutely. And I mean, I thought we were discovered before, but ever since COVID and Yellowstone.
Yes, obviously.
Everyone now has either a dream to come here or has visited or moved here.
Awesome. Awesome. So you mentioned you bleed purple. You're on the Marketo train. What was it like learning Marketo from the ground up? Like, again, like a lot of people, you don't go to school for this stuff. You don't learn these tools in school. What was your learning experience like learning a tool like Marketo? And then I'm assuming subsequently you learned Salesforce at the same time.
Yeah. So they saw my background in sales, like running this TMA thing and building a BDR org. They were like, hey, you have this marketing experience, you have this sales experience. We don't necessarily want to make you a client manager, how do you feel about being a life cycle specialist? Like, that's when you are building funnels, you're tracking unknown all the way to close one deal. You get to meet with clients. It's like, this sounds like my bag. And that's where I started. What was great about Elixir is they had a great training program. So you're in a training program for 8 weeks designed by them. And it was so, so on point. Wow. So it made it very, very easy. And since I already had a bunch of experience, it made the language easy for me to translate into, you know, a boardroom conversation, right? Because often we kind of get in these systems and we get stuck in best practice.
Yes.
But best practice doesn't necessarily meet the legacy infrastructure or process that a company has.
Yep.
So that's really where I think operations gets creative, because you have this stack and then you have this company and you're like, okay, how do I make this hum for this company with this process to drive the most revenue?
Yep.
And that whole mutual benefit, that's where I get really excited.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you said it perfectly, in the sense that, like, their best practice, like, how do I say this without sounding like not an idiot, an asshole? I don't like the term best practices personally, because I don't think it basically says you do something one way and that's it. That's wrong. Like, there's no one right way to do absolutely everything. Like, it doesn't work that way. And when you work with different companies and you work with different types of infrastructure, you have to be creative. Like, that's like, it's almost like you're painting a picture. You're trying to envision an end state before you even start. And a best practice maybe can give you a little bit of guidance, but it's not going to take you to the finish line, in my perspective.
Yeah. That triggered so many things in my brain for me. So the first thing is, in the beginning, like, I mean, back in 06 or back in 13, right? Because Brinker's chart was so small, there were limitations, right?
Of course.
And there were things that you could figure out and do, right? But then there were limitations. Now, today, I feel like if you wanted to solve a problem that was really, really going to move the needle for a company, there is a way.
Yeah.
Like, there is a way. You may not know it yet. You haven't figured it out yet, or you may not have the tool for it, but there is a way.
Yep.
And then that kind of catapulted my brain into, all because you can doesn't mean you should.
It's true.
So this, always this double-edged sword in operations.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think it's something that I've personally tried to not take for granted, in the sense that I've been doing this for a really long time. There's still new stuff I'm learning every day. Like, it doesn't get boring. Like, there are repetitive tasks as part of the everyday life of working in ops, like, be it in your CRM or in your map, or you're pulling reports and stuff like that. But there's always glimpses of creativity, or glimpses of, well, what if I could do this instead? Or what if I could try this instead? That's what keeps me excited about being in an operational role. And just because we have so many of the tools now to solve these problems for us, it's a little bit different than, like, back in the day when, like, oh, I'm going to date myself here with Eloqua, but in Program Builder, like, you couldn't have an app that would, like, do something for you. That didn't exist. You had to figure out how to do things with forms, or with like FTP uploads and downloads and stuff like that. But now there's pretty much an app for everything, which is great. And that's not a bad thing. Like, it makes life a whole lot easier. But I find sometimes that can stifle that creativity. Do you find that at all? Just because there's so much excess technology now that you have problems being creative?
Well, what's interesting is, like, you go from the agency side to the client side, which is where my career led me, right? I was at the agency for a little while, and then I went client side. And from an agency side, you kind of have this little bit of a best practice ego or subject matter expert ego. And then you also know about all these tools and all of these things. But then you go to the client side and you learn, hey, there's budgets, there's restrictions, there's stakeholders. So although now there is this entire world of tools at your fingertips to do and execute, there are still those additional restrictions that will never go away. Yep. So that pressure is what creates the creativity for me. So we have these constraints and this stack, what can we do? It's kind of like cooking a little bit. I don't know if you ever like go upstairs and you're like, I'm not going to the grocery store. I'm going to figure out.
Yes.
What dinner is from what's in my refrigerator. And then you like put it all together and you're like, this kind of tastes good.
I'm not great at that. My wife, Kimberly, is phenomenal at that. And she's the best cook that I've ever met. So that's all I can say there. But yeah, no, that's a great way of putting it. Like sometimes I never thought about it in the way of constraints. Like it's when you think about it from a constraint standpoint, then that's where, that's really where you can start to get those creative juices flowing versus like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Like
the limitlessness of what we're capable of is also what would lead me to being blocked.
Yep.
I think that's also why I love process so much. It's kind of sounds counterintuitive, but I believe process will set you free. And we don't want process to get in the way of progress, to quote someone very near and dear to me, Marina. But process really does set you free. This is the constraints in which you can do this. Go forth and like figure it out. Don't not go outside of the box, but like now you don't have to boil the ocean.
No, I totally agree. Totally agree. You mentioned being on the agency side and you're on the client side now. What, I guess, was there anything that you learned from being on the agency side that you brought into the client side? Or are there things that like, you're just like, I don't even want to think about the agency side. That was just a blast in the past and move forward.
I love the agency side. You get to meet so many people. Especially when you're not, so like if you are like an account manager, you have like a book of accounts, but if you're a specialist, you get pulled in on all of these projects. So you get to meet like the whole breadth of the account list that a company has. And that's a lot of fun.
Yep.
And then also getting, again, that mutual beneficial or benefit, right? You find that when you're on site with somebody and you're talking to marketing or sales in the same room. And that's a lot of fun.
Yep.
And I think all of that I brought to client side, right? So I moved on from Elixir. I went to a company called Sumo Logic. And we were a small team when I started and we blew up and went IPO. And that was also a crazy ride. but I brought every single tool in my toolbox from agency life into Sumo Logic. And I learned a lot from being on the client side. You know, first example was, this is why so many people said no to this, because it just didn't work with their legacy process. And coming into an engagement, right? Coming in just to build a life cycle and then leaving the engagement, you have to get very good at the questions that you ask to kind of uncover all of that legacy knowledge. And you only have 3 days on site. So It was so great to move from agency to client and like do a project and then also be a part of like the results and also see the excitement. So now instead of serving clients, now I'm serving all of these marketers. Now I'm serving legal. Now I'm serving IT, right? And what really motivates me is their success, right? Our job is thankless. If we're doing our job right, no one's finding us, right? Only when things are on fire and things are broken, they're coming for you. Yep. So you have got to get your kicks from something else because no one's coming to say thank you.
Nope.
And what I find is when I get to partner with a marketer on a program or a campaign, and at the end of it, they're excited because it drove what it needed to drive or it met a goal, like we can celebrate together. And that's fun.
You hit the nail on the head there. I shit on the agency life a little bit. I've been in it. I loved my time. I worked at an incredible agency with incredible people. And I learned so much. I just think that agency life has a very negative connotation, usually tied to it. Very like, we're going to pay $1,000 an hour for me to tell you something that like anybody could have told you or whatever. It's just, there's a lot of bad things about it. But I think when it's done right, when you can build those relationships the short-term projects kind of suck in a way, because like if you're getting to know someone and you really like working with them and then that project ends, it's like, oh, I wanted to keep working with that person. And I've been very fortunate with 3MG that I have a lot of clients that I've had since like when I started. So like the relationship is there and it's awesome. And it's so fulfilling to feel that like you're contributing, like you can see your contributions go there. But to your point, like you said, just you have those short-term engagements, you kind of lose that opportunity to see the next step or to build that next kind of scale of relationship. So definitely being on the client side, I've been on the client side too, really rewarding when you can see the end, but then also know it's like, here are the next two things I can now start to do because I'm here and I'm part of it.
Yeah. And you understand the foundation. You're like, okay, if I get this solid foundation in place,
yep.
Then I can plug and play. And that's another interesting concept, right? Like you see all of this chatter or discussion around the next tool or the silver bullet or all of these things, right? Everyone always
asks. Horrible for that, by the way.
Yeah.
I want to get your opinion on LinkedIn in a few minutes here, but
okay. Say that. and every time, and it's always the big sigh in the audience when I answer this question, they're like, what's next? Or what do you think it will solve X, Y, and Z? And I say, there's no silver bullet. Like, it takes time and it takes change management. And it takes, again, putting in all of those restraints and seeing, you know, where you can go with the tech stack that you have. But I mean, it takes process and like data, clean data. So like when you talk to folks about the next tool, well, before you plug in that attribution tool, how do you plan on tracking it? Exactly. Like what's already in your system? Because if you plug that tool in, it's only going to give you a readout of what your system is. And if you haven't changed the oil in your system in 72 years, it's not going to give you a good readout. No. So like you build this foundation to track, you know, channels and statuses and successes and attribution, so that when you do have the budget or when you do have the maturity in your system to plug in a tool, it can read all of that out. No silver bullets, no next huge thing that's going to solve your revenue problems. It takes people, it takes process, and it takes clean data. Clean data.
Yeah. No, and it's funny you say that, because again, back in the day when we didn't have all of these tools available to us, you had to be creative. And a lot of times in being creative, you kind of had to know what data you were working with. So you were making changes to your data ahead of time, or realizing as you were trying to be creative, oh shit, this isn't going to work the way I think it is until I take a step back. Versus I think there's a lot of technology these days that are kind of sold with a false promise of like being that silver bullet, being that magic wand that's going to magically fix everything for you. It's never the case. Never the case.
Do you get on the call with a vendor? Because paperwork is already signed and you get on the call with a vendor and you ask, say, hey, great. I definitely want to support you on this project. When you schedule a call, can you please schedule a call with the technical person? And they're like, absolutely. And you're like, great. And you get on the call and it's a salesperson. And I love salespeople. I used to be one of them. And they're like, absolutely, it integrates. And you're like, okay, great. Is it through an API? Is it through like a standard integration? Is it, you know, let's say in the marketplace or an app?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, that's.
And then you find out, oh no, it's through a webhook.
Or it's through a list upload.
Yeah, exactly. Or list upload. You find out that it's a completely manual process, or you have to build 75 webhooks. And by the way, they want it next week. So always, and especially like coming from a sales background, when you're selling MVP, right? You know, you only know what you know.
Yep.
And so it's no fault of their own, but they absolutely think that they do have a silver bullet, and it is whiz bang. You just plug it in and you press the button, because that's what's demoed to them. And so that's what they demo to you, but you just scratch that surface of the tool and they're like, no, it's not standard.
And I've yet to work in a tool that doesn't require at least like a minimum effort of maintenance.
Oh,
like, yeah. And so like, if you're not prepared to do that bare minimum of maintenance, you're DOA. Like it's just like when you like people, like back in the day when people would kind of fall into a marketing ops role and inherit a marketing automation platform, a little bit different than today, where it's just like, I don't know, just apps in general. If like when you would hire marketing operations people, they would inherit different tools. With the tools that come out now, again, so many of these tools are spoken to as being that silver bullet that like, oh, you can run these beautiful reports. I've yet to find a tool that doesn't, again, require some level of maintenance to go in and manage these things. Are you finding that as well? Like, especially being on the client side, I'm assuming that you're pitched products all the time. Do you see that? Like, what level of, I don't even still want to say transparency, but what level of insight are you getting from vendors these days around the level of upkeep that it takes to make some of these tools work?
Yeah, I don't know if they're ever transparent about level of upkeep, right? They are selling, hey, it integrates and it's going to solve this problem. And then you set it and forget it, right?
Yeah.
Another cooking analogy, right? Like it's a crock pot, like, bye. It's never the case, right? And then depending on what tool you buy, right? Like, let's say it does everything that you want it to do. I can guarantee you it is going to shed light on something that you didn't realize was broken.
Yep.
And now, right, you're going to have to go and triage that thing. But newer tools, right? Newer tools to the market that folks are pulling in. I have never, and this is a blanket statement, and this is true every single, in my experience, if it's new to the market and you, let's say you follow all of the directions and you get everything online, I'm on a call with a developer in a couple of days or within 2 weeks, right? Yep. And that's only speaks to like the level of experience of the person that's integrating, right? Because, and I don't want to name any vendors right now, so I'm choosing my words very carefully. We integrated this tool, again, wasn't out of the box. So we had to configure it. We ran it for a month, and then we found out that it was actually wiping data, with the process that we had in place. And they said, we weren't aware of that. Thank you for making us aware of that. That's going to go to the dev team. We'll deploy a patch in, you know, their next release cycle, which is now March. So we've had the tool in place for about 6 months, I think. And we are just now getting to a place where they can deploy that patch, where we can lean on the integration.
Right.
But as soon as we discovered that it was wiping that data, guess what we had to do? We had to do a manual list load every single time we wanted a data set enriched. So this whole, oh, it integrates, oh, we can just do this. You know, again, people are coming to market with things that are exciting, but again, they're not fully developed. And that's smart, right? Because sure, they're going to get feedback from their customers on what's actually going to move the needle. And then that's where they're going to spend their money in development. So
Well, I think so many tools as well, they come to market thinking that they're solving for a specific use case. And then you get creative folks who are buying that software who are finding different use cases for it. Marketing automation is the perfect example of that. Like, just at least from where I've seen it come historically, where it was an email tool to then a potentially hosting your website tool to a full-on integration with your CRM tool. Like, it starts to change as the business needs change as well. And that's not a bad thing. Like, you want to see companies adapt. It's being on the product side previously. I think it's how do those companies support the customers who are doing more with the tool than they thought, but not like Frankensteining it at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Frankenstein, that's like a triggered word. I'm like, so many tools where you're like, you go into the tool and it looks one way and you make one click and you're like, where did I go? I'm in the 70s. Like, what? Yes. What happened? Oh, they acquired something and then they just smushed it together.
Yep.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it's I think it's the companies that are able to listen, and again, this is all very cliche, the companies that are able to listen to their customers and adapt in the way that their customers are going to use the tool are the ones that win. And I honestly think, too, the ones that are transparent about the level of effort that goes into managing these tools will probably do better in the long term. Like, promising quick implementations or promising, like, really cheap integrations or really cheap implementations as well, you're not solving any problems there. Like, I think any piece of software you buy now, you can turn the lights on yourself.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward to do that. Now, if you want to get in, set it up for your business or for your process, yeah, that's where it takes a level of effort to do that. And I don't think companies should shy away from talking about that.
Well, what's interesting is there's also this very much, we're going to partner with you in this integration. And then you get on the first call and they're like, here are all the documents.
Yeah.
This was a great call. I'm sorry. Remember that time that I worked for a very small company and I'm a team of one and, you know, we're going to need your support. And they're like, yeah, here are the documents. I'll resend you the documents. Well, I've got some light reading before bed. Like, when do you have time to, I mean, there's a difference, right? When you're troubleshooting, you're in docs, you're in the community, but you would hope if somebody is charging you or toting as part of a package that they are going to support you through integration, they're not just going to hand you a document and walk away.
No, that's table stakes. Like, there should be some level of documentation. And if you've paid for an implementation, you should have someone there to help you do that implementation or that integration. Like, that's brutal.
Yeah. Brutal.
I'm not paying for documentation at this point.
You did. You actually paid for them to write that.
Yes, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about LinkedIn a little bit. And I want to talk about LinkedIn just because I can tend to get very passionate about LinkedIn, but it's also how you and I connected. So I think, like, there are a lot of really cool, powerful things about this tool, especially now with the different communities and the groups that you see forming on there. I guess the types of content people share is getting very different than what I'm used to seeing on LinkedIn, but that's fine too. What's your perception of LinkedIn?
Well, to be fair, I this is bad and I need to get better. I don't post a lot on LinkedIn. I consume a lot on LinkedIn. I engage a lot in LinkedIn, but I'm not posting a lot in LinkedIn. And
that's not a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Not necessarily a bad thing, but I would like to participate in the community more. Where I hesitate is there's so much that we would have posted 06, you know, 13 that would have not aged well,
yes.
Or that, you know, would still be out there. And again, not age well, Or, you know, there is so many ways to do something. So to offer a solution to a problem and have a period at the end of the sentence and a stake in the ground is not what operations is
about.
You're
such an operations person. I was just
yeah, I'm like, it's not what it's about. Like, I don't have the right answer. And taking the ego out of that has helped me succeed, because if you think you have the right answer, there's someone tomorrow that's going to come along and do it better. And if you think you have the right answer, you've now closed off your mind to 30 different other solutions that could be better.
Hallelujah. So
that's where I get, I'll post about like Halloween or my favorite ice cream flavor or like take a survey. But as for like, here is the end all opinion about ABM or an MQL, or how many times have we gone around, like, just let's talk about the print industry, right? Let's go back to print is dead. Okay, well, how many times can we say the same thing and be proven wrong? So I'm trying to figure out a way to be heard on that platform. And this was like just dipping my toe in the water, reaching out to you.
Well, I appreciate that. And you, yeah, I mean, I think the one thing people need to remember is that the internet's written in ink. Like, I'm like, now, mind you, I don't think I posted, like, I may have posted some like hot takes of like marketing automation in like 2008 that maybe haven't aged well just because technology's changed. But like, I get all of that. But I so agree with you with the folks that kind of come on, and it seems very more ego driven than anything, that like, I have the answer. This, like, I am declaring that this is the way you do something, or this is the best platform. And I find that it's people that tend to yell the loudest or are the most frequent with it tend to get the following, but there's not a lot of pushback. And I don't know why.
Yeah,
maybe we need to be the ones that push back. I don't know.
We'll just shake everybody up.
Well, and I think too, you have to look at the motive. Like, and again, I'm getting into the nitty gritty thing. I could go on this forever. You have to look at the motivations of some of these posts as well. Are you partners of certain companies? Are you, did you work at a certain company? Like, everyone thinks that I'm the Eloqua guy. And I'm totally fine with having that tag on me. I haven't used Eloqua in 4 or 5 years. Like, I just haven't. But and that's fine. Like, if people want to perceive me as the Eloqua guy, I can still use the tool, very much so. But I haven't done any consulting work on it, especially since I started 3. Actually, I did very little consulting a few years ago as 3MG. But maybe I'm just more skeptical of people these days. Like, what's your motivation for posting this? What's like, it's that sort of, I go through that. And I think that's where I hope, like, I try to be as like me as possible on LinkedIn. I don't know the answers to everything. I'm like you, like, I tell it to my clients, and maybe being public on LinkedIn. And I've talked to Sydney and Lauren from Emmy about this, that like, if you go in these public forums, especially as a consultant, and say you don't know something, am I limiting my own opportunities here?
Yeah, that's another thing from the agency side, right? Like, where you have to kind of tread lightly, like, who's in this community?
Yep.
Can I post? Is it safe? Like, if I post and I am, you know, charging for this information, you know, where is the boundary there? Or is a client going to see that I'm posting, you know, to this forum? So that gets a little bit sticky. Yeah.
It was funny. Like, my clients know that I'm active on LinkedIn, and I posted a meme a couple of days ago about, it was an Austin Powers meme about living dangerously by not having checks and balances to see if your records exist in CRM. And that was inspired by some work I was doing with one of my clients, and they got a kick out of it. At least they told me they got a kick out of it, because they knew it was kind of them. But at the same time, that's something that's like, as a best practice that I've always been learned, that I've always been taught with integrations, is that like, before you make a call to another system, validate that you have the data to make that call. Anyway, to your point, kind of talking about clients seeing you on LinkedIn. I think I'm very fortunate to be at a part of my career where I'm pretty confident with what I can do. I feel confident knowing that I feel like I'm good at what I do, hopefully. I don't mind. I think it's easier for me to be a little bit more, maybe not rambunctious, maybe a little rambunctious.
Oh. Fun, like honest, like, yeah, vulnerable. Like, hey, let's share, because this is happening everywhere. So client side, agency side, there's nothing that's surprised me. There's no problem that's new, right? Like everyone, that's interesting. A shame just kind of came into my head, right? Like, so there's like this shame that we're guarding at our company is like doing something that can't be solved, or doing something that some other company isn't doing. Trust me, you guys all have the same problems. You may have different systems, different tech stack, but like, it's all this very similar. And I think the more we could share, I think it would uplift everybody.
100%. And that's why, like, you see these communities like MoPros, some of the communities around different hashtags on LinkedIn as well, which that's something I'm started to follow along with a little bit more. There's so much more information out there now, and so many more people willing to share that information. Now, because there's this that much more, we have to be smart about the source of that information. Who's saying it? Why are they saying it? It's like the news too. It's just, you don't want to, like, I'm not saying this to be like, don't trust anybody, because everyone's got like ill will intentions for everything. But there are a lot of different ways to do stuff. So if you have that open mind and you're willing to listen to different people from different communities, you're going to be better as an operations or as a marketing specialist too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, from the start of my career till now, like, people that are just starting out, right? I remember just starting out and thinking I had to start out knowing everything, yep. Right? So you are in this culture, and I'm seeing a big shift, but when I started out, you're in this culture of, you really don't know anything. You're brand new to the market and you're trying to learn as fast as you humanly can. But then you have people in leadership positions that are promoting a culture of just get this done, or get this done now. And this is obviously a long time ago, or just figure it out. And
yeah.
I do appreciate that, because that's given me a lot of drive to take initiative. But that's not how I want to be as a leader. It's not how I want to be as a manager, right? I want to make sure that everyone, like inclusive versus exclusive, right? Like, everyone has a voice, even the quietest person in the room, even the newest person in the room. Because let me tell you, I have a bias being in this industry for such a long time. I am, as friendly as I am, jaded, right? And I know that fresh eyes on something, whether it be an SDR or an intern saying, hey, what about this? Hey, did you think about this? Is going to kind of knock this old machine into like a new creative gear. And if I don't promote that, if I don't promote the curiosity, like, we're not going to solve big problems.
That hit home to me very specifically with a few of my clients who are younger than I am. And I'm not saying that as a negative thing. So they've been in the industry a lot less than I have. The amount that I've learned just by listening is insane. And it doesn't matter if you've got 5, 10, 15, 20 years experience. It's your desire to want to problem solve. It's your desire to want to learn and ask questions. That's the value. That's the thing that really works well for me, versus this motivation of like, just get it done, or like that hustle culture, like, maybe it worked before. And like, you mentioned that you had kind of gone through it in the past. I've gone through it in the past too, where I look back on it and say like, yeah, it was kind of good they pushed me. Did they do it negatively? No. But like, would I do it that way? No. That's just not in my personality to be that way. So it's interesting that like that hit really heavy for me. Cause I've got a few clients that are just getting into the industry.
I just don't believe you have to be a dick to get things accomplished.
You
right?
Don't.
Like, you don't have to be mean. You don't have to be a dick. Like we spend so much time at work, right? And I know everyone has different motivators, right? But if I'm not having fun most of the time, what am I doing here, right? Like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm spending most of my life here with these people, and you are choosing it. Like, let's choose to be kind. Let's choose to have fun. At the end of the day, you know, I'm not saving babies. Life doesn't hang in the balance of what we do. Have there been some real huge moops in my career? Absolutely. But so much learning, right?
Yeah.
And again, at the end, lives don't hang in the balance of what we do. And if you put so much pressure on something, that's again also not a good way to find a solution to a difficult problem. No. Right.
No.
So yeah, just having a lot of fun. People are like, operations is not fun. Process is not fun. Data is not fun. I'm like, it is.
You like, find it. I equate it to building. I like to it's very different than like building a chair or like planting a garden or something like that. Like, you're building in software, you're doing these things, but there's nothing like, especially in what we do, there's nothing more satisfying than like taking something that didn't exist before. Now all of a sudden you can do something so much more efficiently because of it, or you have X amount more visibility because of it. Like, you see, it's a different type of end product that you're producing, and it's not physical per se, but it's still super rewarding. Agreed. Rewarding in a very nerdy way.
You get to partner with, you know, what the world deems the creative side of marketing or the creative side of sales. You partner so closely with those folks that kind of bleeds over. But if I had to do both, I would lose my mind. I would be a schizophrenic, like this whole left brain, right brain. Like, I just need another person to be the left brain or the creative side. And those people who are so different from me, like, we have so much fun because we drive the business forward. We are the opposites, but we both need each other to, you know, drive revenue.
When you can find people like that in your career, I've been very fortunate. I'll say mentor. I don't think I've told him that I look at him as like a mentor, but he knows he is. And he's been one of my closest friends in work and outside of work, Chris Pecco. He was always my boss, but he got what I did and I got what he needed to do. And there was something that just worked. So it was just like, he could say something and I could translate it into a solution, or I could say a really technical problem, and he would be able to talk about it at the 5,000 foot level, whatever cliche you want to use. But when you can find people in your career like that, man, it's really rewarding, but B, you learn so much more because you don't have to rely on you don't have to be everything. Yeah. But you can learn to rely on other people for those strengths that they have that maybe you don't have.
For sure. And what's interesting is, as an operations person, right, you can, in my mind, I can always say yes to more operations. I shouldn't, right? But like, another tool, sure. But like, when you have somebody that's splitting the role of like building and then also building like the assets or the content, that's where, you know, you're definitely, you know, draining your resources in that one human being. Because you get so deep in the tech, sometimes I lose My husband would never say this, but like sometimes I lose words. Like I couldn't think of a call to action if you paid me $1 million because I've been in Salesforce all day. Like all I see are ones and zeros. Like, I don't know. Click the button. Click here. Here.
Here. Click here. Download now. Something. Like, I totally get it.
Three sentences. I can't. Oh.
Totally get it. Shannon, I'm very cognizant of the time here, and I really appreciate that you've made the effort to want to come on. And we're not done yet, because we're going to talk music, and we're going to change things up with the music this week at your question, which I'm excited about. But just, I want to say thank you for just sharing your perspective. This is like, for me, this is really cool, because again, this is the first time we've really chatted outside of a DM. And I'm really hoping that we'll obviously continue to stay in touch. I would love for you to come back on here again as well. But before we close things off, we do have to talk about the music. Now, you asked a really good question about the music for this episode. Can I pick it? Not me. Can you pick it? I love that idea. So have you put a little bit of thought into maybe one or two songs you'd like to hear on this episode? And why?
So I've got two super, super special people in my life. One is a bass player, lead singer in a local band here in Bozeman. His band is called The Dirty Dirty.
Love it.
The whole band, super, super talented. So when I started listening to your podcast, I was like, I wonder if he could do an intro song with the Dirty Dirty. So I'll send you a couple of their tracks. You awesome. Let me know what works. And then you can maybe intro with the Dirty Absolutely. Dirty. And then I have this really great piece of property in Bozeman, Montana. We're super blessed. We found this place a little over 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years ago. And there was this medical student that I had met again through social platforms, and she needed a place to park her bus while she was taking her gap year before she went to med school.
Okay.
And I was like, this sounds great. And I was like, well, let's meet her first. Met her, wonderful human. Yep. She's going to do wonderful things in the medical field. Turns out she's in a band.
Oh, geez.
She's a lead singer in a band. And she is the most humble, modest, raddest chick. And she kind of invites me to a show. And we go to a show. Total banger. Right? So she sings in a band called Mountain Standard Time. And I think they've recorded two tracks.
Okay.
So if I can get a hold of those original tracks, ooh, I will send those to you.
Yes,
you can. You can pick between Mountain Standard Time and the Dirty Dirty. Unfortunately, because I think everyone in Mountain Standard Time is kind of in flux, right, in their life, I think they only have two more shows before
that's it. You know,
they're all across the globe. She starts med school in July, but hopefully they'll get back together maybe in a year or so when she's doing residency.
Well, I would be honored to have all of that music, because it all sounds right up my alley. Just even the names, just I have a feeling I know what I'm getting into. So thank you for that. Yeah, definitely make sure to send those along to me, and I'll get them cut into the episode this week. Any parting words? Where can people find you?
Oh, find me on LinkedIn. Make me talk on LinkedIn, please, please, please.
I'll have a link to your profile when we post and promote the episode.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's someone else in the community, but now that operations has been around for a while, right, there's got to be a collective of females that started in tech, right, that have gone through just the absolute chaos of onboarding and having a career and now having babies, right? The yep. ME Collective does such a great job of talking about that.
Yep.
And I think I think I have a, I think I have a little bit to say about that. Working on baby number two and being in tech and managing all of that and how it impacts your honestly your brain.
Absolutely.
And you could totally cut this out, but I remember getting pregnant and thinking, oh gosh, now I'm going to have to be a mom. And I'm doing all of this operation stuff and I'm so good at it. And all of these things are, you know, clicking in my head and I can manage a team and project management and logistics. Like, can I do this and also still be a good mom? And I remember the fear in trying to figure out how to do both. And I'm on the other side of it now. And if I could go back to talk to my younger self, I would tell myself not to worry, right? Your brain's not going to turn to mush. Yep. You're going to be a great mom and you can absolutely do both. And that's like a whole nother podcast.
I would love to hear more about that. Honestly, if you don't go on someone else's podcast to talk about that, I would very much love you to come on and maybe we'll find some other women who have gone through kind of the similar thing of coming up in tech, because we know like tech is very white man. It's just the way it is. I'm sorry. It's not, I don't want to say it's just the way it is. I'm not saying that that's acceptable, but that's the way that tech is usually shown. And like, we don't see that there are women that are rising the ranks, getting into tech, which is typically a very male dominated industry, having families and doing both. And there's so much I would love to hear from you on that. So if you don't go on someone else's podcast, we will make that happen on this one.
Okay. Yeah. There's just so much even going into maternity leave. Like if you're a one person rodeo and you're going out on maternity leave, like how do you prep your company for that?
Yeah.
How does that all work? So, I have some other things to say about that. Okay. So.
We'll talk as people say, we'll talk offline about that, because I think it would be really great to get, again, other folks who have been in that position to share. I've been
fortunate. Just want to help more people. Like you talk about motivations around posting on outlets. Like that's something that's like a just deeply embedded, like passion project of mine. Like if I could be of help to any other new mom, onboarding, offboarding, maternity leave, all of those things. Like I would love that.
I can just see how passionate you are just talking about it. So share your perspective.
Thanks, Mike.
Shannon, thank you again. Really, really appreciate it. And we will be in touch.
Absolutely. I'll send you that music.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much to Shannon for joining me this week. How cool is it that you get to meet someone kind of live? Shannon and I, like I mentioned, we had only exchanged a few DMs here and there on LinkedIn, and that turned into a podcast appearance. So this is literally the first time that I've sat down and had, I don't want to say meaningful, because we've had conversations, but a very... very structured conversation. I guess that's the best way to put it. But it was great. Shannon knows her shit. That's the easiest way to say it. And when you are able to talk to someone like Shannon who knows their shit, it is a very fluid conversation. She gets the ins, the outs, the goods, the bads, the pros, the cons of all of that when it comes to marketing and revenue operations. And that's the kind of stuff I like to elevate on this podcast. It's not just folks, maybe at the beginning, one of my ideas with that this podcast would be around folks that have kind of gotten it on their own. But what I'm finding is just through different conversations that I've had is you don't necessarily have to go on out on your own to figure out and carve your own path or figure out and do some really cool shit. And so that's, I think, the way that the podcast is going to go in the future. And you're going to see that in the next few weeks, the next few months with some of the guests that I've had. I am humbled. That's all I will say. Absolutely humbled of the folks that have decided to take time out of their day to come on to this little podcast and talk to me for half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour. It's pretty wild. And very fortunate to be able to do it. And very fortunate to be able to talk to the people that I do. And I don't take that for granted whatsoever. Let's talk a little bit about the music this week. So like I mentioned on the podcast, and like Shannon mentioned, I left it up to Shannon this week to pick the music. And so we had two different bands, one to bring us into the episode, one that's going to take us out of the episode. The song that you heard coming into the episode was called UK Girl by a band called MST or Mountain Standard Time. And the song that you heard coming out of the episode was called Bear Sheets by a band called The Dirty Dirty. And I love that name. That name is fucking awesome. So kudos to The Dirty Dirty on picking an absolutely fantastic name. The songs are awesome. The first, honestly, for me, it was the first time I had heard both of these artists and heard both of the songs that Shannon had shared with me. And it feels very right for the podcast. And I love that. It just feels like one of those nice, just, it just fits in. It's what I want the podcast to be. And maybe that's what we'll do moving forward. The guests get to pick the songs that we hear on the podcast. I'll probably throw my own song in here and there every once in a while. I have to. I love music. And I want to share my love of music with people. But every once in a while, maybe I'll ask our guests to pick a song or two to come in and come into the episode. Shannon had the gold medal today of being the first attendee, the first interviewee, the first guest of the Indie Marketers podcast to not only request certain bands, but have music picked out ready to go. So thank you, Shannon. Let's talk a little bit about the socials. You can connect with me on LinkedIn at Mike McFarlane. I think it's Mike McFarlane 1. I think that's my handle. You can also find Mike McFarlane Marketing Group 3MG on LinkedIn. You can find us on Instagram at 3mg.ca. We do some fun stuff on there. Kim does some really fun stuff on there. I tend to do a little bit of fun stuff late night, maybe on the weekend, maybe after a few cocktails. Fun shit. Marketing can be fun. Marketing doesn't need to be the stuffy bullshit where you're just shoving ebooks down people's throats. Sorry, I will stop there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. We'll be back very soon. The next episode after this one, I promise you, is a banger and one that is, I can't wait to share with the world. Super excited. Anyway, thank you, Shannon. Really appreciate getting to know you today. Really appreciate you making the time to come on. And thank you to all for listening. Let's have a good weekend, eh? Until the next time, see ya.